When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to Talking Transfers from the 90 Min Podcast Network. I'm Scott Saunders, joined by 90 Min's transfer correspondent, Graham Bailey, and 90 Min's top cat, Toby Cudworth. Please subscribe to the show on all major podcast platforms and follow us on social media as well, at @_ScottSaunders, at Graham Bailey, and at @Toby_Cudworth. How's it going, guys? I missed last week's show, Toby. Things moving along nicely?
Yeah, not from a West Ham perspective. We've had a couple of losses now. Our usual big six defeats to Manchester City and Liverpool. But ticking along, enjoying the rugby. Florent, I know we don't like to talk about other sports on this podcast, but the Rugby World Cup is keeping me entertained and you as well.
We do tend to talk other sports. The Ryder Cups this weekend as well. And yes, I've missed last week's show as I've been out in France at the Rugby World Cup. And I got to see Wales with a record win over the worst Australia team in history, Graham. Guessing you're a rugby fan as well, Graham.
I am. I'm more of an NFL fan, so congratulations to me on Cleveland Browns for a magnificent win at the weekend, getting back to winning ways and going 2-1. And also, as we mentioned the Ryder Cup, Scott, we must say congratulations to the ladies of the Solheim Cup. They retained the trophy, and I did watch a lot of it. It was very, very good. Dramatic ending, finishing 14-all in Spain. So if we get the same, much of the same this weekend in Rome, it is in Rome, isn't it, TC, I think, this weekend?
It is.
Yeah, looking forward to that. Well, when we're not working.
Anyway, yes, we are here to talk about football, and I'm guessing you're here to listen to stuff about football, and specifically football transfers. So, 90min.com for all the latest from us, 90min.com/talkingtransfers for all the latest transfer news in a written form, and 90min_football on the socials for everything that we provide as well. But Toby, Graham, and I are here to talk about transfers today. That's what you're here for, too. We'll talk Ivan Toney. We're going to talk a little bit of Chelsea. We'll talk a little bit of Jadon Sancho, Hannibal, David De Gea, Ollie Watkins, Bruno Guimaraes, some Juventus, Son Heung-min, and Federico Di Marco as well towards the end of the show. But let's kick off with Ivan Toney. Not playing football at the moment. He's currently serving a ban from football for betting offences and is set to return. He's back in training with Brentford at the moment, but is set to return to top-level football at a competitive level in mid-January. So still a bit of time away yet for Ivan Toney, but he's going to be looking to hit the ground running. Question is, where will he be playing? Because Brentford have him, but Chelsea and Arsenal are looking at him, Graham. What's Brentford's position on selling?
Yeah, they are open to selling. We know that, Scott. Thomas Frank was on Monday Night Football like last week, confirming they're open to bids. And you know, every player has a price. And teams who work to analytics, especially like Brentford, every player does literally have a price in their system. The price being floated around at 60 million, that's not what Brentford are hearing. They will not accept 60 million for Ivan Toney. Sources confirming to 90 Min, it's way more than that. We're talking about a 27-year-old England international in his prime. Yeah, he hasn't been playing the last few months, but that's not down to injury. It's due to a domestic suspension. We know Chelsea want him. We know Arsenal want him. It's a perfect storm. You know, if you are trying to sell a player in England in January, it is the perfect storm, isn't it? Having Chelsea interested in your player and throw Arsenal in the mix as well. What happens when Arsenal and Chelsea go for a player together? Let's think the recent history of this aspect
with some football. Brentford involvement as well.
Yeah. I think 60 million, when I first heard that, I thought it was too low. We did our checks. That's not what Brentford are thinking at all. It really isn't. I think we're talking 75, 80, even 85 million for Tony. And I think in the current transfer market, you know, I think that's about right, guys. I don't know what you think. I think 75, 80, 85 is more the correct price. You know, Rasmus Højlund, what did he go for in the end? 70, Scott? Around
I think it was 72 million, including potential add-ons.
And we're talking about Everton, tried and tested Premier League player. So I think that, you know, that's the ballpark. So I think Brentford are well within the right to ask for that. And they're in a good position where if they don't get the fee met, they won't sell. That won't stop them necessarily bringing in a striker in January. We've done a report as well where they are looking at other options. Wolfsburg's Jonas Vind, one of the players they're looking at. Marcus Leonardo, who West Ham fans will know, Toby, they're looking at him as well. So they're doing the due diligence on who is out there, because I think they know they need one long-term anyway. But the Ivan Toney situation, I think Ivan Toney really feels like there's a move, possibility of a move in January, and it is going to happen. We do know Arsenal have asked about him. We know Chelsea have asked about him. This is a real thing, and I think it could very well happen, but it won't happen at 60 million.
Toby, I'm just going to come to you next on... I have a couple of questions, really. It's obvious after the weekend's games that maybe Arsenal and Chelsea do need a striker. We've known Chelsea have needed a striker for a long time, but there's always been questions about... I see the narrative now starting. Gabi Jesus missed that chance in a North London derby. That would have probably killed the game off from a Tottenham perspective. He put it over the bar. Does an Ivan Toney miss that chance? Does an instinctive, brilliant finisher miss that chance? And that's one question for you. The second question... Are Brentford right to be asking for that much money if Ivan Toney hasn't played football for 6 months?
I'll address the first point in terms of finishing. I think Ivan Toney does take that chance at the weekend. Whether or not Ivan Toney gets the ball back off James Maddison in the first place is maybe a different story. Are Brentford within their rights to ask for that amount of money? I think they are. Again, this comes back to the argument of what the player is worth to that particular club. We will look at Jack Grealish, Declan Rice, other players of that ilk, Moises Caicedo, over the last couple of years have all gone for huge money. That's their worth to the club that they've left. And for Brentford, Ivan Toney is clearly their best player. Brentford have actually got off to a bit of a sticky start this season, a bit slow out of the traps, and they look like they're missing that key ingredient up front, which is obviously Toney's goals. Scored 20 last season, didn't he? Which was the third highest in the Premier League. My only concern with this is that Arsenal do need a striker and they need a clinical finisher. And I don't think Gabi Jesus is that. I think if you go back to the podcast last year, we all expressed our reservations about him being the central striker. I think he's very effective out wide, but they need a finisher who's proven to score goals at the highest level when it really matters. Toney's got the goal record, certainly last season and in his seasons in the Championship. But it is a different kettle of fish trying to fire a team towards the Premier League title, because ultimately, what are Arsenal looking for here? They need a missing ingredient, or they need a player that can take them up a notch. Now, they finished second last year. Is Ivan Toney the player to put your money on to fire you to a Premier League title? I don't know whether or not he is right now. Has he done enough in his career over a long period of time at a high enough level to take that burden of responsibility on? I'm not sure. Would Arsenal want to pay 75, 85 million pounds for a player who up until 18 months ago was playing at Championship level or below? Maybe not. Should Arsenal be looking at a player who's already playing for a top tier team, a Dusan Vlahovic, for example, somebody who is proven at the highest level, and is on the radar of a number of European clubs? You don't see Ivan Toney being linked with the likes of Bayern Munich and all that kind of stuff. They never even considered him when they were going after Harry Kane. So I think maybe Arsenal should be looking beyond Toney in terms of price and what actually they want to get from their striker. But whether or not they go for him, he's there for the taking, right, Graham? I think Brentford wouldn't stand in their way if they did get the money.
Graham, can I add another question to that?
Mm-hmm.
When, if this is to happen, when could it happen?
Well, obviously... we're told, obviously, it could happen the 1st of January, but obviously the suspension would still be in place. So, you know, it's in mid-January, isn't it, when he's back officially. So the deal could be done at any time in January. I think it depends on the position that Chelsea find themselves in. I think Chelsea are looking closely. They will go for a striker in January. Whether it's Tony or not, we'll see. Arsenal are doing the homework on him as well. Arsenal, I think, we'll see how their forwards do in the next few weeks. Kai Havertz obviously isn't that man. Eddie Nketiah, I'm lost. How is he an England international? I mean, what has he done to warrant a call? I'd love to sit down with Gareth Southgate and tell me why you've called him up.
Did he play for England? Or was he just called up?
I think he was called up. I don't think he played. He's the example, Graham, of a data player. The data tells you that Eddie Nketiah covers lots of ground, makes lots of smart, intelligent runs, puts pressure on the back line. That's what makes him stand out. It's not his goal record. We've sat here for a long time saying, why did Arsenal give him 100,000 a week for 5 years? There was no proven.
It reminds me a bit of Ashley Fletcher on that aspect, Toby. It reminds me of Scotland as well. Ashley Fletcher, where he's got everything about him. He's got height, pace, everything. But it's just, the results aren't there. He doesn't finish. Everything about him suggests him. It suggests he should be a bit shy. But what worries me about Nketiah, and say it on Sunday, and Gary Neville made a good point, where that chance at the back post, where he just doesn't have that nous. He's not a fox in the box. So what does he do? What is the point of Eddie Nketiah? I just don't see it.
I didn't expect this to go this way.
He's going to cost. Eddie Nketiah, and I think Arteta's looking at this. And me and you discussed this off pod earlier in the week, didn't we, Toby? Where you raised that point, is Tony enough? And I said to you, I think those half a dozen 10 goals that Tony would get from January to the end of the season, that could be the difference, Scott. So it's all those draws you have at the end of the season that Nketiah misses these half chances, and he'll continue to miss them through his career. Tony will probably take them. So I think that's something they're looking at. Yeah, Vlahovic is an interesting one. We'll touch on him later in the pod as well, because they may have missed the boat on that one. But I do think they need that fox in the box. They need that striker. I think Ivan Toney plays for Arsenal against Tottenham at the weekend. Arsenal win that game.
There is Declan Rice was removed from that due to an injury concern as well. Maybe if he'd stayed on the pitch, Arsenal would have won as well, with Jorginho making that mistake, which led to Son's second equaliser. But you mentioned some... we mentioned Chelsea already. We've also mentioned potential other striking options. And especially if Chelsea are going to sign somebody in January, might not be Ivan Toney. But there's another name on the radar. He's doing quite well at Feyenoord, Graham. And we talked about him on this podcast before. I think he was on Man United's long list as well in the summer, wasn't he?
Yeah, Santiago Jimenez really is making a lot of headlines in Europe. He's probably one of the most in-demand forwards at the minute in Europe. You know, obviously we know about the Osimhens of this world, etc. Lautaro Martinez at Inter. They all come with very hefty price tags. Santiago Jimenez, you know, we don't really know the price tag on him, but look, it's at Feyenoord. He's not going to cost much more than 40 million, really. But he's had a sensational start. 6 goals in 5 games, which I don't think includes his, which is a bit annoying for him. He had a brilliant hour against Ajax on Sunday, when a lot of clubs were there watching him, Chelsea being one of them. Arsenal were there too, and Tottenham. Newcastle were there as well, but they were watching Minte, who's having a very good season, actually, on loan at Feyenoord. Because Feyenoord were 3-0 up before the game against Ajax was abandoned on the hour. But Jimenez, to that point, had scored 2 goals and had an assist. I think this guy is a real potential superstar. I think he's now up there with the likes of Sesko and Hoyland, Scott, these up and coming. These are the big new names. But Jimenez is fascinating. I think he's really got the goal-scoring record to go. It's a fine order playing wonderful football under Arne Slot. So keep an eye on Jimenez. He really could be one for January. I think if they progress in the Champions League or do okay, I don't think he'll leave. But if Feyenoord stutter and don't look as if they get into the next stage of the Champions League, he could be available in January. And, you know, this is the Eredivisie. Every player has his price. As you know, Scott, Ten Hag probably knows too fine well that every player has his price. It's a risk, obviously, buying strikers from Eredivisie. We know it's a bit of a graveyard for players. Coming over, but I like him a lot, Scott. I don't know if you've seen much. I think he's great, and I could see Chelsea taking the chance on him, but maybe for January, maybe for the summer.
Turns 23 in April, represents Mexico if you have not seen him already. But yes, causing a big stir, scouted during the display against Ajax, which I believe was abandoned due to... I think they're replaying it behind closed doors in midweek, I think Wednesday night. But yeah.
They're doing the whole 90 minutes, Scott? Or they're doing from half an hour?
I don't think so. I couldn't tell you.
That'd be very harsh.
I'd want to be fuming if that's the case, aren't
they? I don't think you can do that because it just sets a precedent, isn't it? It's like where some of these foreign games, you just throw a load of fireworks on the pitch and to get the match redone. Yeah. Even some English teams might take a leaf out of that book if that's enough to get a game restarted.
But yes, yeah, so let's move on anyway, because we have talked strikers for now. We've mentioned Arsenal at length. Chelsea are the other team that we've briefly mentioned. But let's dig in a little bit more on them, because I'm seeing who is to blame conversations happening again. Graham's favourite, Todd Boehly, is getting... Perhaps he's getting a bit of stick, but I'm seeing it turn onto Mauricio Pochettino, Toby, as well. But his team are creating chances, he's just not taking them. And we did flag a number of times. I think all of us were quite surprised that Chelsea didn't sign a striker as well as Nicholas Jackson in the summer. And it's starting to hit them where it hurts, isn't it?
Yeah, but Chelsea don't really seem to have a plan, do they? Pochettino, I don't want to say he's panicking, but he's chopping and changing things at Chelsea. I haven't watched their games wall to wall, but that's what I'm hearing from Chelsea supporters. He's kind of changing the system that they played in pre-season. Some of that is down to injury, and they have lost key players. Christopher Nkunku is missing. Reece James is missing. But, you know, they've benched their vice-captain, Ben Chilwell, for the last couple of games. There's no coherency still about anything that Chelsea do. Still murmurings about board members going into the dressing room after games. It's just all these little niggly things still going on in the background at Chelsea. And they didn't fully address the fundamental issues in the transfer window. Graham said it all along. A goalkeeper and a striker is what they were crying out for. And they've ended up with Robert Sanchez in goal, which absolutely was not the plan or can't have been the plan at the start of the summer. And Nicholas Jackson, who looks... to be brutally honest, a bit out of his depth at the moment. Undoubtedly, there's a player with potential in there, but he can't shoulder the burden of leading Chelsea's line at this stage, not when they're desperately trying to pull themselves out of this year-long rut that they've been in. What is it, 5-6 games they've won this calendar year? It's dismal. And you're right, Scott, the tide is turning against the manager. I don't think it's his fault, but this is what happens at Chelsea, right? You don't get time to turn things around, really, until the heat turns on the manager. I don't think it is Pochettino's fault, but that's just...
I don't know about you guys, but I think there's so many similarities between Chelsea and Man United at the moment. Like, so many of them. Injuries, you look at the fact that you could maybe argue that the Chelsea style is there, but obviously they don't have a complete team. The difference is you have an ownership who have a plan of signing every good young player in the world, and then another ownership who are looking to make as much money as they can. But I suppose that's the grand plan for those owning Chelsea long term as well. Graham, how do you digest the Chelsea situation? Because you love Pochettino.
Yeah, I do, and yeah, I see the similarities with United. You know, it's got, you know, two very good managers who, if they were just given free rein, the two clubs would be much better off, really. They would. It's the interference from a hierarchy who think they know about football, who get involved. You know, this Chelsea thing, as Toby said, there are glaring needs in this Chelsea squad. A goalkeeper and number nine were paramount. They really were. All these Chelsea fans we had, and I know I was having a bite back at them in pre-season. Nicholas Jackson is not a Premier League starting number nine. This is a guy who almost joined Bournemouth, no disrespect to them, in January. You know, and they rejected him because he failed a medical. He is not good enough at the moment. He's not better than Armando Broja. You know, that's not doing a disservice to either of those players. They're just not good enough to start for Chelsea at number nine. They had a chance to take Dusan Vlahovic. Oh, you don't think he's good enough for you? Well, take a look at the Italian goal scoring charts now. Look at Dusan Vlahovic and what he's doing in Italy right now. I think he's good enough for you now. They should have gone out, just got Osimhen or got Vlahovic or got Lautaro Martinez. There was strikers out there to get. There really was. There was players out there who Chelsea could have gone and got. You know, they spent stupid amounts of money on some players. You know, Caicedo, they overspent on a little bit, however you can argue, did they overspend on Lavia? And if you had all these money up, they probably could have signed another striker. And the money was probably there to do it. And then signing Brighton's number three to play in goal. It's just Chelsea Football Club. It's some ridiculous decisions. And that's similar to what United did, Scott, in some regards, where panic buying towards the end, suddenly they had a plan and it went awry. Some of England's biggest clubs and most successful clubs are just being run like a joke at times, and it's not good enough. And the likes of, and that just in stark contrast to the likes of City, Arsenal, Liverpool to a certain extent, you know, they don't have to do anything to get ahead of these teams because they just stand still. Like City, I think City, I wonder if City's hierarchy have a joke, say, so what, should we just not do anything this summer? And I imagine we'll still be taking strides away from these teams, and they will. We're just making life easier for these other teams. The top three, I think the gap with the top three and the rest is bigger than ever now. The only ones I can see getting there are obviously my tips for the top four, Scott, Tottenham.
They were getting there. If they don't have Harry Kane,
I think you'll see the evidence on 90 Min that they were my tip for top four and they will be there. I love what Ange is doing. I think they're the ones who will threaten top four, and I think I don't see anyone.
Top five. Most likely going to be a top five.
Yeah, to get top five. And yeah, that might be the hope for some of these teams. But onto Chelsea. Yeah, they need to do stuff in January, and I think they will. I think it's ridiculous to blame Pochettino at the moment. You know, some of the decisions are just, unless he's played a hand in some of them, you know, even like the Sassi signing, it just annoys me. He's no better than Trevor Chalobah. What an absolute waste of money he is. There's better players in England than him. I tell you what, United, Scott, I bet you bring a huge sigh of relief. If you'd brought De Sassi into that United squad, can you imagine the disaster at that play? He is a bang average Premier League defender and they've overpaid for someone else.
United have Johnny Evans, Graham. I'm absolutely thrilled.
But when you're saying De Sassi, Scott, you're thinking, God, imagine us bringing him into a place, Maguire. He's not better than Harry Maguire. He's not.
Toby, this is Chelsea's run. Fulham away, Burnley away, Arsenal, Brentford, Spurs, Man City, Newcastle, Brighton, Man United, Everton away up until mid-December. That is, they have 5 points from six. I mean, they can't score. I think they're in the bottom four, I want to say, for the calendar year in terms of points. I think they've won six games in 38 or something. Like, is this that bad? What happens now?
They must beat Fulham and they must beat Burnley. I think it's that simple. They've got to address this form sooner rather than later because that is not a great run of fixtures they've got coming up. And they're missing key players through injury that we've already touched on. They've now got a suspension. Malagusto is going to be out suspended. It's hard to see where they turn from here. It's hard to see who's going to score their goals. I think this is the age-old thing is, if it's not Nicholas Jackson, who else is going to score the goals? Mudryk looks woefully out of touch. Noni Madueke is not getting a look in. Signed an 8-year deal, not getting a look in.
Also Raheem sold Sterling. By Pochettino at Spurs.
Yeah, that's. I wonder how that sits with him. So psychologically, it's probably not the forefront of his mind, but in the back of his mind, he must be thinking, this is a manager who didn't rate me then. I think he's only played two of their Premier League games so far this season. They've got to start picking up points immediately, Scott, because you don't want to say they could be in a relegation battle, but they could be cut adrift from the top six pretty quickly. And this happened last year where they were 10th or 11th, and that was after, what, 18, 19 games? And we thought, wow, they're already out of the running to get, and they didn't really improve.
At least they had Champions League.
Absolutely. Imagine if they miss out on European qualification for next season. With the squad that they've got and the money that they've spent, that's an unmitigated disaster, isn't it, Graham? Because the revenue that you get from being in European competition, the pull of the club as well, to not be able to offer any kind of European football for the second year in a row, unfathomable.
Yeah, it is. But I think they will see the January window as a time to correct what went wrong. And now I think it's... you know, they're only a couple of signings away from, you know, they were unlucky to lose Fofana, because I think going forward, Fofana and Colwell, they've got a world-class, potentially world-class back four, but to keep them on the pitch with James and Chilwell, obviously, as you said, Toby, we don't know what's going on there. If they get to January, just get the goalkeeper in, get the number nine in, and I don't think they're a million miles away. But January's a long way from now, isn't it?
When we say address things in January, though, they'd have to sell players, right? To be able to bring more in, they've still got a very bloated squad. They'd have to get rid of some players, and they're tying them all down to, what, 7-8 year deals. A lot of them only arrived last year.
I think there's a lot of potential loans. You know, Amando Borgia, is he going to stick around? I could see him going in January. You know, I don't think he's going to go. Washington will probably move on loan. I think there's avenues there, Toby. I think they... You know, I think there's options there for them. There's room for a goalkeeper. They've got the number two goalkeeper long-term in goal now, so bringing in someone ahead of him, I don't think it's an issue. And I think they did quite well in moving a lot of players on, to be honest. You know, they did a good job in moving Kepa on. But then Sanchez to come in as number one, it just defeats the object, doesn't it? They may as well have kept Kepa.
Anyway, let's move on. Just wanted to say a brief note that Nicolas Nkunku is the player that everybody's pinning their hopes on. Given how successful Chelsea signings have been so far, there's no guarantee that Christopher Nkunku works in the Premier League either. So I just wanted to point that out. Anyway, let's move to another transfer. Yeah,
I hope it's not the Christopher Nkunku I saw in that two legs against Rangers. As you know, guys, he did not impress me in those games or anyone, but... Yeah, on that left-hand side. I don't see Nkunku being an improvement on a Palmer, Sterling, etc. He's a good player, he really is, but he's not going to come in and score 20 goals for him.
We'll see. Talking about, we've just spent some time on some signings maybe not going so well. Graham, I think we always thought Jadon Sancho would work out, just too good, really. It is not working out at all, is it?
No, it's a strange one, Scott. You know, a player who we both liked long before he came to United. You know,
I still like him.
I do. In the Bundesliga, in come on. I don't think United, you know, and again, it's just, I liked Anthony as well. I do like Anthony as well when he signed, but did you need them both in the squad? That's probably questionable, especially the amount of money that's been spent on them both. They're both excellent players, but you wouldn't really have them both together. The Sancho situation is just ongoing. Our understanding is the hierarchy, you know, they're trying to move this up.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona Tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Over Scott, to try to get him to basically apologise. And basically, Erik ten Hag left it in Sancho's court. He's not going to be involved in the first team until he apologises. He hasn't done that yet. It's our understanding that coaches, members of the hierarchy and members of the first team squad are trying to help things over, smooth over, as we said. They're trying to convince Sancho that he needs to apologise to get back involved. Otherwise, he won't be with the first team anytime soon. And from what we're hearing, Scott, Sancho's not on the brink of apologising. So let's hope it's resolved soon. But how long's a piece of string?
I personally can't see any other way than in January he leaves, and it's pretty early. Even if they do magically smooth it over for a couple of months at least. But yeah, Jadon Sancho not in the mix for Man United at the moment after the fallout with Ten Hag. And Toby, what do you make of it, actually? Like, just talking about this, I mean, you know, Ten Hag's trying to set a precedent, trying to set rules for a club that hasn't had rules, really, or discipline for a decade. And Sancho's not meeting them. How do you see it?
I think there has to be a threshold of standards. I think it's unfortunate that Jadon Sancho appears to be a bit of a scapegoat in this situation, and a player who was already low on confidence is the one who's at the centre of a bit of a storm. If this was happening to any other player, would it be as publicised as it is? But because it's Jadon Sancho, I think it's being elevated. Yeah, I just think the pressure that comes with the fee that he arrived for. And look, let's not forget, United were tracking Jadon Sancho for 2 years to play on the right wing. He then arrived at United, having been playing on the left wing for Dortmund for essentially the last 12, 18 months of his stay there. And he was competing with Marcus Rashford for a place on the left-hand side. It's almost as if he's been set up to fail since the moment he arrived at United. And I don't think he's got a fair crack of the whip in the first team on the right-hand side. United have obviously brought Antony in and spent over 80 odd million to do that. Is Sancho ever going to be a first team regular, Scott? I think is my question, because Marcus Rashford is in it for the long haul, signed a new 5-year deal. He's your highest paid player. His favoured position is starting out on the left wing. That would appear to be Jadon Sancho's number one position. So just looking at it from the outside in, before you even get into the intricacies, will Sancho ever be a first team regular for you? I don't see it now.
You haven't even mentioned Garnacho there, and that's his favourite position as well.
Yeah.
And I'm seeing the United frustration about him not being involved so much in recent weeks. But yeah, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer did an interview recently and said pretty much that Sancho's preferred position is on the left. But as you point out, Toby, they signed him to play on the right. So indication of
and they knew this, right? Yeah, they knew this. It wasn't a earth-shattering news that he liked playing on the left. He'd been doing that for Dortmund for well over a year before he arrived. Yet they still persisted and pushed through that deal.
I think for me, I mean, like I think Sancho does need to, you know, whether he means it or not, swallow his pride and apologise. But like, United aren't without guilt in this as well. And obviously we should all, there's a difference between, you know, being in a workplace and having to do what you have to do in order to work. And I'm seeing Jadon Sancho deleted his Instagram profile today. So I can imagine, you know, that that's probably come from tons of comments that he's getting on his posts, which is, you know, it's a fine line here, but obviously we wish Jadon Sancho as the best, obviously, because we know how difficult that can be in that situation. But there's a balance to strike there, which United, I think United are doing what they need to do for the good of the club. But moving on to Graham, I think you wrote this story last week. Hannibal Medjbri played at Burnley. New deal possible for him?
Yeah, it's interesting. One, Scott, his current deal technically expires in 2024, but United have got the option. He won't be going anywhere. So yeah. They like him. Eric Ten Hag likes him a lot. Actually, he's involved now, Scott, isn't he? He's one of these where I don't think he's viewed as a potential world star, but he's, you know, United over the years have been very good at producing these squad players, for want of a better word. You know, we had the McTominays, the Fletchers, and Nicky Butts. You do need these players. And I think Hannibal ticks that box. Homegrown, he'll become a homegrown product. And obviously, he's involved now. It shows he is impressing Ten Hag. So it's our understanding, yeah, they're open to a new deal, talking to him, and they think it'll get done. They won't be letting him go. And I think the fact that Ten Hag is using him, Scott, I think probably does highlight the fact that he will get this new deal, and he's in the round. I like him as a player. I think he's combative.
In the Championship, last season.
Yeah, he did well. Yeah, he was good. Yeah, he did. And it's not just because of his hair, but he did stand out in games. He did take games by the scruff of the neck, which I liked actually. He wasn't just sat, you know, where similar to say Billy Gilmore, the Chelsea, when he was out on loan, he was a bit tepid, and even Harry Skip, when I saw him, he was a bit the Spurs guy. They're a bit standoffish.
Just default to call.
Yeah,
Spurs players Harry.
But Hannibal was getting involved, and he wanted to be on the ball. He was involved. He was committed, and yeah, I like him. I think he's got a lot of United traits about him, and I think he will stay in sign, Scott. I think and that's good for the club. You need to keep these players about. You can't let them all go. And I don't know whether you like him or not, but I think he's a good player.
I mean, I think that United pinning their hopes on maybe Kobe Manu as being the one player who can become that established midfielder long-term. But like you say, Graham, you know, they need more energy in there. That's something that they're lacking, really. And he does bring that. He's got a bit of technical quality as well. So, you know,
how long is Eriksen going to be around for, Scott? McTominay?
I could see Eriksen leaving.
Does he leave? Yeah, do you know what I mean? There's still got to be a lot of moving parts in United's midfield.
Yeah, totally.
I like him, Scott. I think against Burnley, he showed a lot of desire to get on the front foot as soon as he received the ball. His first thought was turn, get at the defence. Yeah. Covered some good ground, and I think he could actually help unlock Bruno Fernandes' goal scoring this season if he does play more games. Bruno obviously pushed further forward alongside Hoyland, scored a terrific volley. It's just energy. I think that United have been lacking in the early weeks of the season. Mm. He had that in abundance at Burnley. So a useful squad player, as you say, Graham. I'm not sure he will be a first-team regular for years to come, but I think...
Imagine the fans like him to the squad.
Yeah, I think there's what United fans want to see. It's tradition. Yeah. You know, they want to see players from the academy given a chance. You never know what people could become, you know? There's a lot of love for Johnny Evans's performance at Burnley on Saturday as well, which is nice. But another long-term favourite, David De Gea, is not with Man United anymore. And still does not have a new club, Graham. How does it stand on his future? Because, you know, there's a big debate on should United keep him? And nobody's bit.
No, he has. Well, say that. He has had offers. He's turned them down. From Saudi Arabia, Qatar. Cristiano Ronaldo's been trying to woo him to take him to Al Nassr, but doesn't look as if he's that keen on doing it. You know, there's offers if he wants to go to MLS, etc. It looks like he wants to go back to Spain at this point, but he's open to offers. There are a few teams in Spain have shown interest, but as it stands, he's also considering retirement. I think he's a bit young yet, but it is an option. You know, he doesn't need the money. He's a very wealthy guy, like most Premier League footballers are. But yeah, he's keeping his options open. I think we'll get to January. I don't think he'll make a decision before January. He might, but I don't think he will, from what we've been told. So we'll see where we are come then. He's so that misses the Premier League Golden Glove winner, you know. For me, if I was Chelsea, I know who I'd be calling. I would if I was Chelsea, I'd be bringing him in tomorrow. If I was Chelsea, I'd be bringing David De Gea in tomorrow. He's far, far superior to Robert Sanchez. He's a free transfer. I think it's an absolute no-brainer for them, personally. But De Gea is very loyal to United. Would he move to another Premier League club? We don't know.
Let's move around. Done a bit of United now, but let's talk Newcastle United. They just beat Sheffield United 8-0. Who saw that one coming? I mean, Graham, you probably did, to be honest.
Not really, because I've done a few different shows. I do think, I still think it's the case that Newcastle are missing that number 10. I did get a text of someone saying, ha ha, they definitely don't need a number 10 along those lines. But I said, well, having Sheffield United doesn't point to the fact that you have a number 10. I still think they do need one. But no, it was a good win. But yeah, one of the key players in that win, Bruno Guimarães, finally looks like they're getting through to him in terms of contract. It's agreed in principle, we're told, Scott, verbally agreed with the player. He'll be signing that soon. You know, they wanted to get this done before January. And they are aware of the teams looking, you know, Man City, Real Madrid, etc. It's a really interesting one. It's our understanding as well, Scott, on the Guimarães deal, that there was a clause in another player's contract that needed resolving first before Newcastle could do with it, which explains why there was a bit of a hold-up here, because they've been talking to Bruno for like nearly a year now. such was the impact he had when he arrived in January 2022. But that's been resolved, and so that's getting another deal. He'll become the highest earner at the club. And yeah, everyone's happy. He's been such a sensational signing for them since he arrived. You know, arguably, it plateaued a little bit this year, but his performances are still at an incredibly high level. They really are. And he's key to everything Newcastle want to do.
Yes, he is indeed. Another new contract story. Ollie Watkins as well. We did just jumbled the order a little bit, but Ollie Watkins scored the winner at Chelsea. We spoke about Chelsea at length already in the podcast. But Unai Emery happy with him?
Yeah, why wouldn't you be? You know, his record since he arrived at Villa is double figures every season. He really is an outstanding player, England national now. Since he moved to Villa, he hasn't had a new contract since he moved there, and a lot of things have happened since then. Lots of goals. He's becoming England international, so he is worthy of the steal. Again, they were talking early this year when it first happened, and they were close to a deal in Easter. For some reason, I think Villa were claiming off-field stuff, and obviously they've changed directors of football. They have the president of football operations in Munchie now, who's overseeing this. Villa are confident this gets done, but they do need to get it done because he's got less than 2 years left on his deal now. And, you know, we talked there about the likes of Chelsea and Arsenal looking at Ivan Toney. Why wouldn't they be looking at Ollie Watkins? So that's another reason that Villa need to get this done. And they know that, and it is happening. So they're confident this is done before January, because by that point, he would only have 18 months left on his deal.
Toby, no West Ham section today. We don't have anything in the running order, but we just talked about... I saw Lucas Paqueta was getting a lot of love the other day for his Anfield performance. But, I mean, talking Aston Villa, like Newcastle might be a bit of a jump, but surely West Ham should be looking to compete with the likes of Villa here.
Yeah, I think they're very much in the same kind of boat. I think West Ham and Villa now should be setting their sights on qualifying for Europe every season. This is the third year in a row that West Ham are in European competition. Villa dipping their toes back in. Look, I compared Villa trying to tie Ollie Watkins down to West Ham trying to tie Jared Bowen down to a new long-term contract. He's on the list, I would say, for teams in the perceived big six. Whether or not Watkins and Bowen would get regular game time at those clubs, I don't know. They'd be exceptionally handy squad players, but I think they'd be the marquee players to lead West Ham and Villa, respectively, into European competition for years to come. So for Villa, I think it's just preservation of value, number one, trying to tie Ollie Watkins down now. It stops the chatter as well, Graham, doesn't it, about Watkins' future. If they get to 18 months, you can see more and more links emerging. Whether or not Watkins will get a gig at those big teams, I'm not so convinced, to be honest. I think Villa is probably the peak of his level, but it's a smart thing to do to tie them down. Same with West Ham and Jared Bowen. Just stops the noise. And I think those are the kind of players that West Ham and Villa can build around in the future.
I think it's the one dangerous thing for Villa and probably why they're trying to push it. If Ollie Watkins does see Ivan Toney being linked to Arsenal and Chelsea, is Ivan Toney that? Is he better than Ollie Watkins? I'm not sure. I think it's a bit of chalk and
different
cheese.
Different type of players, fair point.
I would personally take Watkins ahead of Toney, given the goal scoring record. I say he's hit double figures every time he's been at Villa. I think Toney, you do have to look at off field stuff as well. It's interesting. I think where they are in their career is very similar, but I think if I'm Molly Watkins seeing Ivan Toney linked to Arsenal, Chelsea, really, why not me?
Yes, indeed. Let's move abroad a little bit. We'll come back to England shortly, but we're looking at Italy towards Juventus. We mentioned Dusan Vlahovic already in this show as a potential target or a target for Chelsea and other clubs in the summer. Arsenal tried to sign before, but Juventus are looking to tie him down to a new deal along with another of their most famous names, Graham.
Yes, Federico Chiesa. I always say Enrico.
Enrico Chiesa.
Shows my age. Shows my age. I say it to my son.
To be fair, me and Toby grew up with Enrico Chiesa as well.
Yeah. We did.
I said it to my young son the other day, and he just stopped me and said, "Who's Enrico Chiesa?" I was, oh, God.
He was good as well.
He was. They played well together, wouldn't he? He's more of a central goal poacher, whereas Federico is on the left. Federico started the season wonderfully well. 4 goals, 5 appearances. I think 2025 his deal is up, and they're working hard to do him a new deal. You know, Juventus are working hard to get back to where they were. They've had a lot of off-field issues, Scott. And the big thing for them is they brought in Cristiano Gentile, who was at Napoli. And the thing with them is the players are really happy with him. He's really got Juventus sorted off the field. You know, Chiesa and Vlahovic, they were looking to leave. They really were. If not this January, last summer they were talking about it. But now he's got it sorted. Chiesa is very close to agreeing terms now, we believe. Talks are ongoing. And Vlahovic will be soon after him. He's got another year left, so Chiesa is ahead of him in terms of the talks. But Gentile sees these two as key to Juventus going forward. And you have to agree. And both of them have started the season brilliantly. Both 4 goals each. Vlahovic even an assist. Vlahovic, you know, I joked about where Chelsea must be looking at this now, thinking, what if? And a lot of teams are probably, I think everyone was doing Vlahovic a massive disservice in the summer, dismissing these. But there's a reason, as we said, that Mikel Arteta and Arsenal have always liked Vlahovic. They tried for him. And I don't think we're doing it now, because I think Vlahovic will end up staying. I think it's a different situation now with him, same with Chiesa. And Juventus is interesting. You know, they've got Rabiot there as well. We're hearing there's nothing to do with his contract yet, but he's playing well, he's happy. I think a lot of these key players for Juve will end up staying, because as in football, they are happy. Obviously, they do have the Paul Pogba situation to tackle going forward at Juventus, but Gentile's come in there and they needed someone. You know, I think Chelsea and United should look at a situation where they need someone really to get this right off the field, upstairs, someone disciplined, someone knows football. And he's in a short space of time, he seems to have got this sorted out.
Could Kefren Turam be joining them, Graham?
Fascinating, isn't it? Turam, amazing. We haven't seen him linked tomorrow with Juventus. Talk about the Paul Pogba situation. Juventus clearly are looking at options. Even if Pogba isn't suspended, you know, he's going to go to Saudi Arabia at some point in the near future. We know that. We discussed it on the show. He's one of the Saudi Pro League's top targets. We know that. So Juve are looking around at possible additions. Manu Kone at Gladbach out injured, so I had to look at him. But Kefren Turam is a player who Juventus like a lot. His dad, Lillian, would love him to go to Juventus. Keep an eye on this one. It's got legs. Tottenham have been watching him this season. He was a target for Liverpool, who were keeping an eye on the situation. They'd like to know how he's doing. So wouldn't rule out a future move for them. But as it stands, Juventus like him a lot. And this could be a January one for them.
Yes, indeed. Let's move on to... Well, move back to England. And we're going to jump back to Italy towards the end of the show. Federico Di Marco, we'll talk about in a second, but Tottenham. Toby, do you buy into Ange Ball? Are they? He's getting. I'm seeing a lot of everybody saying, like, "Oh, Ten Hag still hasn't instilled a style of Man United. It's been over a year. Pochettino's barely doing it with Chelsea, but Ange has done it in 6 games, and they're going to win everything."
I like what I see from Spurs. They're a completely different side to last season, but I would like to temper the excitement a little bit by saying they've played an undercooked Brentford side so far this season. Bournemouth, who haven't won a game. Burnley, who haven't won a game. Sheffield United, who haven't won a game. Those are amongst the teams that Spurs have beaten. North London Derby was the first time, really, that we've seen Spurs tested. Okay, they played United, but it was a very off-colour United.
And if that, I don't want to bring referees into this, but that Romero penalty that was given the other day, exactly the same thing in the United game, which was at 0-0. We were on top in the first 30 minutes.
Yeah.
So it changes the game completely. Anyway, sorry.
I'm sure Gary O'Neill will say the same thing as well, Scott, about his comments at Old Trafford.
Gary O'Neill does not like referees, does he?
He's on the end of some stinkers, isn't he, at the minute, too?
Yeah, I do feel for him. But look, Spurs are playing well, Scott. I don't think you can get away from that.
Oh, of course.
However, the teams that I've listed are a factor. What I also would say is that Spurs have mirrored their start to last season. Things went downhill massively under Antonio Conte. but they also picked up 14 points from their first six games last year. So this is an uncharted territory for Spurs. They're used to getting off to hot starts. The challenge now is going to be keeping up the momentum. They've got Liverpool next at Spurs. So that would be a huge test, I think, of where Spurs really are. Two unbeaten sides, Liverpool in form. But they're clearly better to watch and they have a more defined style. And it's getting the best out of their players. James Maddison has settled in very quickly. And Son Heung-min, who we're about to talk about, the style of football clearly suits him. And I think his goal output is going to skyrocket this season because he's going to get into better positions than he did last season. And hey, look, he still had a decent goal scoring year last year. And that was a poor season for Son. So there's promising signs, but I don't think we should be getting carried away.
Yeah, I mean, just the Liverpool game is another big test for them. Should be quite entertaining the way Liverpool are playing at the minute as well. And I suppose it works in Spurs' favour that they're actually out of the League Cup already, which has been glossed over as well. They're out of the League Cup. They don't have European football to play, so they just got the Premier League to concentrate on until January, until the FA Cup starts. So they can really give it a go. And Sonny is the lead man, Graham. Will he be staying longer?
Yeah, you know, his current deal is 2025. I believe there's an option on that as well. But yeah, they're going to recognise him. There's no worry here. There's no massive hurry to get a new deal done. But they are holding talks. Could be done soon. But if it's not, it's not a huge worry. He's loving life. That was the big thing I'm told, that obviously any new deals at Tottenham, we have to see the relationship, how it is between Ange and that player. With Son, we're told it's brilliant. Son loves playing this role. The central role looks made for Son, doesn't it, at the moment? I saw him at Burnley and it was terrific. Brennan Johnson, I thought, for his first game, looked great. I like Kulusevski a lot, but I still think they could upgrade to someone more suited to that system. I think Kulusevski is very good, but I think someone else might be better suited to that right-hand-side role, but a good squad player nonetheless. I think they look great and the players are really happy. But because they're getting results as well. But as Toby said, we have to be guarded. But yeah, if Tottenham can get a Son deal done, we're told it could be quickly. But if it doesn't happen straight away, there's not a huge worry. He's not going anywhere, as we know.
Final topic. Is Federico Di Marco coming to the Premier League, Graham, with Man City interested in him previously? And Chelsea also, not sure what's happening at left back there, really, because Ben Chilwell is, as Toby mentioned earlier, a little bit out of the picture. You got Levi Colwill filling in there. You got Cucurella, who they nearly offloaded to United in August or September. I can't remember when it was. But Di Marco is doing well at Inter. Could maybe fill in that position. Chelsea, Man City interested potentially, but will he re-sign with Inter?
Inter hoping so. You know, he has been a real success story for them in the last 18 months. He's outstanding. He's playing really well for Italy. And City, as we reported early in the year, they like him a lot. He can play anywhere down that left-hand side. He's very good defensively, which City do like from the fullbacks. The thing with Chelsea's interest is fascinating. As you mentioned, Cucurella. He looks like he'll be on his way in January. He's one of the players we're talking about where he could be moved on. But Ian Maatsen, we talked about him on the pod in the last few weeks. Still no new deal for him. His contract expires at the end of the season. So there's a good chance, if he hasn't signed by January, he'll be gone. So Cucurella and Maatsen, suddenly everyone's thinking, oh, Chelsea, why would they sign another left back? Lewis Hall, another one they've let go to Newcastle. If Maatsen and Cucurella goes, they need another left back. So I think that's why Inter are thinking here, you know, DeMar, one of the best left backs in Europe. Could we see Chelsea coming in? Yeah, they like him. They've been doing the homework on him. They are doing the homework on left backs. And if you are looking at the best available left backs in Europe, DeMarco is near the top of that list. So it's no surprise to me to see Chelsea linked. So yeah, we'll keep an eye on this one. But as I say, Inter are trying to get it done. They're trying to get him signed up before the January window.
All I'd say on DeMarco is that he's excelling playing as a wing back, right? Yeah. Inter have long played three centre backs. And we're talking about Poch's crisis, about what formation to play. Ben Chilwell doesn't seem to be his favourite in a back four, but Ben Chilwell as a wing back is a different kettle of fish. He gets into the box, is very effective in the final third. So for me, it's about what Chelsea are looking to do long term. Do they really want Chilwell and DeMarco competing for the same wing back role? I'd argue not. Whereas at City, that would give Pep the flexibility to play three centre backs, let's say it's John Stones, Ruben Dias, Nathan Ake are the three that are playing. DeMarco on paper would be the left back, but because they're so dominant, he's essentially playing left wing back, left midfield, tucking infield. He'd be much better suited to them, I would think, just because of how good City are and the players that they've got at their disposal. But because it doesn't make sense for Chelsea, maybe that's why that probably will happen, right? That's how they tend to operate these days.
And I say, if they do lose Ian Matson, one of the teams he could end up at is Manchester City.
Oh, lovely way to end the show. Lovely stuff. Anyway, we will move on from there until next time. This has been Talking Transfers. We always go too long. Always 52 minutes. Good grief. Anyway, we thought this one would be done within 40 today, but we just rabbit on a bit too much. Hope you've enjoyed it anyway, if you've stuck with us for this long. Please subscribe on all your major podcast platforms and follow us on social media at @_ScottSaunders, @GrahamBailey, and @Toby_Cudworth. 90min.com for all the latest, 90min.com/talkingtransfers for all the latest transfer news from the team, and @90min_football for the social medias. I believe we're as that on Instagram, Twitter as well, or X, if you want to follow us there. Anyway, Toby, Graham, thanks very much. Until next time, everyone, this has been Talking Transfers. Thanks for listening and see you soon.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.